Move forward. I will call to order the Pacific City Joint Water and Sanitary Authority Board of Directors Business Meeting. We are meeting February 8th, 2022 at 5 p.m. and we are on a video conference call due to COVID. I'll call the roll. Tom Donahue.
Here.
Ann Price.
Here.
John Carlton.
Here.
Cameron Gogas.
Here.
For the record, all directors are present. Item 3, the meeting minutes of the January 11, 2022 business meeting. Are there any corrections to those minutes? Hearing none, I'll move that we approve the meeting minutes of the January 11, 2022 business meeting.
I'll second it.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the January 11th, 2022 business meeting minutes. All in favor, say aye and raise your hand, please.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. We have 4 ayes and 1 abstain. Meeting minutes have been approved. Item 4A, the accounts payable for January 15th and January 30th. Are there any questions on the payables?
Somebody else has it.
Okay, hearing. Oh, Sean.
Yeah, I just had one question on. Sorry, where'd it go? Well, I can't find it in front of me now, but it was there was a director training. I think the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Just was wondering what that was.
SCAO was going to do their annual conference in February, and Director Gogas had indicated that he would like to go, so we set everything up. And then they canceled it for COVID, and they're only doing it virtually this week.
Okay, thank you.
Who else? Come on.
I do.
Yes, Cameron, please go ahead.
Can you put her in a way, please?
On the first page, 105, that person was Beckwith and Cuffle.
I believe that one was on last month. I don't see that one on this month's board packet. That'd be you, yep. That was for the hotel, and I was actually, you'll see it on this next month's one, but we were able to get back a portion of that hotel fee because it wasn't technically refundable, but I pulled some strings.
Well, isn't it if you give them a 24-hour notice?
Not with every hotel, no.
Well, check that one off, and we'll go back to going back that one.
Yeah.
That was like that on the do not register. Hey, that's too bad. Page 205, Oregon Finance Garden Landscaping Services. We're paying $450 a month for lands.
No. Services? No, it's only like every 3 months. They don't come every month.
This isn't part of Corn Crib.
No, that's a completely different company. Oregon's Finest Gardeners we just got in November because our gardeners that we had previously cost way more than $450.
Okay.
So we change companies.
So now is this for what areas? Is this just for the main building?
Yes.
Or just for the other areas?
Just the main building.
Excuse me?
Just for the main office.
Okay. So then the guys and stuff, they maintain the other properties then as far as stuff like that?
I mean, they do weed eating and stuff. I wouldn't say they're landscapers, but yeah.
They're not arborists.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Pacific Coast Lock and Safe, deadbolts, FEVT, $140.
Well, unfortunately, every time you call them out, you get a service call, and that costs more than changing out keys, but they are the company that we originally had key the building, so they have like our, I would call it a master key thing that nobody else is supposed to have because they're special government keys. I'm sure there's a special name.
What we find out that somebody's got a key?
No, we bought new doors for the FEB and had to get deadbolts. And then we also had one of our locks rekeyed because it had been worn out, one of the cylinders that goes in the door.
Oh, okay. And then on the same page, 305, U.S. Ecology Office Documentation.
Yeah, I
decontaminate.
I can take that one. That was an extremely late invoicing for professional the facilities after we had a COVID scare several months ago.
Oh, is that when it came through and sprayed all the buildings or all the office areas?
It was the second time they had come through, yes. We had done it once previously when we had an employee test positive for COVID, and we had a pretty substantial COVID scare. I don't think it really materialized, but
did they wash the windows after they were done?
They did wash the windows, but the place was definitely disinfected. I can say that.
Is that common for that $250?
Well, keep in mind, and this will come up again later in our conversation. Keep in mind that these are an emergency environmental response company that responds from Portland, and they usually get here within 2 hours after I call, and so there's unfortunately a significant fee that comes with that, and you know the travel time to Pacific City. Plus the work they do while they're here.
Oh, okay. So, then there's a question. Are we going to just go ahead and do maybe a service or monthly cleaning?
Well, I don't think it's necessary to do a monthly cleaning, but I think based on my experience and, you know, some of the experiences I had up in the Seattle area in 2020, this is something that's worthwhile to do. Whenever you have reason to believe that somebody with COVID may have been touched, high touch surfaces or been in the offices or been in the vehicles, and you know the vehicles get shared, so I don't think it's necessary to do it proactively, like preventatively, on a routine basis, but I definitely. It's advised after you've got a COVID scare in the workplace.
So did they go through and do all our vehicles then too?
Yes, they did.
Oh, okay. All right. Coastway Construction, same page, 305. Moving water line right away to Pacific City Heights and the septic tank replacement.
They mowed the right of way for PC Heights. It's up by the 6th. Well, it's up in PC Heights near the 600K, I believe. It's not something that we have the equipment to do, and they were already up there, so we let them do it as well. And then we replace a septic tank on Resort Drive. We are in charge of about 90% of the septic tanks in the district.
So, do we contract that out, or why don't we do that ourselves?
We definitely don't have the equipment to do that.
So, basically, every time anybody needs a septic tank, we're going to have pay somebody to come in and pop those out.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen as often as you would think.
Okay. Thank you. And on page 4 of 5, Shore Pine HOA.
They've
a refund?
Yeah, they sold. Well, they sold, changed management companies. And so the previous management company that was paying it had a credit on the account and received a refund check after the account closed.
Oh, okay. All right. Hey, thank you very much. Thanks for being so patient.
Yes, Tom. In reference to Director Gogas's comments about the deadbolts and locks, it seems to me we had a line item last month. Is this a completely different set?
Yes, it is. There's a set of doors on the front of the FEB and a set on the back.
Okay, thank you. That's all I had.
If there are no other questions, I'll entertain a motion. I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for January 15th and January 31st of 2022.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payable for January 15th and January 31st of 2022. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Item 4B, the fiscal year report. Any questions on the fiscal year report? Hearing none, we'll move on. Item 5, the manager's report.
Thank you, Carolyn. Wanted to touch on a couple of items related to the manager's report. As you know, I usually give a COVID-19 update, and did reinstate our employee screening program a couple of weeks ago, and I'm glad we did. I need to let everybody know that we have had a couple of positive COVID cases at the authority recently, and I'm pleased to report that one of them is back to work. And another one will be hopefully returning to work the middle of this week. We've had two confirmed positive COVID cases amongst the employees with a suspected third one. So things are on the rise. I know that even my wife's nursing home, with all the precautions that they take, they're starting to see things tick up. I know nationwide, the Omicron is starting to taper downward, but I don't think we're at that point yet, Tillamook County, and we have to continue to be extremely diligent. And I think one thing that's working, tad bit in our favor is the fact that the CDC has modified their quarantine and isolation guidelines, which is enabling people to return to work a little quicker than they otherwise would have, but we're still being very cautious. And these rapid tests have been very helpful in this process. We've used these a lot, and I've never seen a positive on a single test until late last week, and we got two of them. So it's, you know, they seem to be accurate, seem to be doing their job. But I'm disappointed to report that a couple employees were impacted by this, but equally or more so pleased to report that they are doing just fine. So we'll continue to buckle down and be and hope that things quiet down. I'm sure they will. We've had several positives at the authority, and although natural immunity isn't given a lot of credit, perhaps rightfully so, the fact that people are either vaccinated or have had it may indicate that we're out of the woods largely with this. I don't think this will ever impact the authority in terms of our continuity of operations, especially in light of some of the reduced CDC guidelines that do get people back to work earlier with precautions. So we're following all the recommended guidance, and I'm reminding the staff to be diligent. COVID fatigue is a real thing, I can tell you that. And COVID fatigue leads to complacency, and this is just another example of why we can't be complacent. The office has been closed since late last week, and we'll stay that way until we get through this peak that we're experiencing. But I think we're going to weather it just fine, and we just have to continue to be careful.
Now, I've got a question for you. Is any of the spread due to anybody in our facility, or is this from an outside, like a home environment, or being out, or outside of anything of work? We're not spreading it within our company, are we?
Well, I think two of the cases are unrelated. The third case may potentially have been a transmission at the workplace. I don't know that for sure, and even the people infected don't know that for sure. But I am pretty confident that two of them were isolated incidents that were not spread at work.
So is by detecting the COVID, was that through our self-detection, or is this going outside of our detection?
Well, the most recent case, the person that we're hoping can return to work in the middle of this week, that person did not have symptoms. That person had no idea. It was our rapid test that was the primary indication to us, to the person impacted, and that person was sick a day later. So I think that's gives me quite a bit of confidence in our rapid testing program.
So are we on a 5-day wait over then before coming back, or do they have to test negative before they can return back to work?
Well, according to the CDC, what they need is 5 days, and that's 5 days from either the onset of symptoms, or it's 5 days from the time that the collection of a specimen for a COVID test was taken. And so according to the CDC, they can come back after 5 days with no additional testing as long as they continue to wear their mask and so forth. I can say that somebody did come back after 5 days, still testing positive, and we sent them home for the remainder of the week.
Tom, I'm sorry. Cameron, go ahead.
I'm still, it's just, are we doing boosters? Anybody, people that have had the COVID, have they, they've gotten their shots, I believe, but have they bumped up on boosters? where are we, I mean, where are we going to stand as an organization? Are we requiring boosters?
No, we're not requiring boosters at this point. I think, and to be honest with you, Cameron, I can't answer your question conclusively. I haven't inquired about that. I'm aware of some staff members who are unvaccinated, others that are fully vaccinated, which is, by definition, having the two-shot series or the one-shot Johnson & Johnson. But as far as being up to date, which is the new CDC definition of being boosted, your vaccinations are up to date. I don't know how many people have gotten their boosters.
Tom? John, you mentioned in your report that you were running low on the test kits. What kind of status are we?
Well, what we're finding is that the main supplier, the manufacturer, a company called Abbott, which is where I bought our initial supply, and I was able to get quite a bulk of them at that time. They've been sold out continually, almost continually since then. I check back about twice a week. What we are finding is that through Walmart, through ordering online, that off and on we can purchase a maximum of 6 test kits. And that's 12 total tests. There's 2 tests per kit. And we've recently done that. I think Rochelle had just ordered another 6, but it's only 6 per person. But what we found is when people try to go in immediately after me to order, they often say they're sold out. So what we're doing is we're just doing our best to try to replenish our supplies as we can by wherever we can get them. I know Ann had mentioned that they were giving out some free rapid test kits to people at various locations around the county. However, it was only 1 per person.
One other thing, I've heard reports on the news that they're testing water supplies. I'd assume that'd be outflow, but I would also assume that maybe it might be wastewater, but that they've discovered COVID in the supply systems. Are we doing anything about that? Are we doing any testing, or has the CDC given you any kind of a guidance on how that's going?
Well, no, and I actually hadn't heard that. The last I heard is there was no conclusive evidence that COVID has spread via wastewater streams, although I guess it stands to reason that maybe it could. Certainly not a problem on our drinking water side. The wastewater side, I'm unfamiliar with any requirement or even any suggestion to begin testing those process streams for COVID. And even if we did, I don't know what you could do about it. I don't think, humans can get vaccines. You know, what do you do about potential viruses and pathogens and wastewater? We have pathogens and wastewater routinely, which is one of our primary purposes in our treatment techniques is to remove those pathogens, not only from drinking water, but to certainly reduce them before discharge from our wastewater treatment plant. I don't have any specific information about that, Tom.
So you were pretty adamant that our basic water supply, it's extremely difficult to get COVID there or to detect it?
Yes. Well, I think it would be extremely difficult for it to find its way into our public water system. Our treatment processes are designed to kill viruses and to disinfect the water. And I would think that COVID as a virus would be no different than any of the other viruses that we disinfect to protect people against.
Thank you.
So there's no studies out there as far as...
If there are, I haven't seen them.
Dan? If I recall correctly, it's been several weeks, if not months ago, Oregon's, if not a year or more, Oregon State University had begun a research program using testing wastewater facilities in various parts of the state. And we had some discussion locally about whether or not Pacific City might want to volunteer to be part of that study. I believe at the time the response I got was that because we are A, small, and B, so much of our effluent going into the wastewater treatment plant came from tourist population, that we were not a good candidate for the projection of COVID population, which is what they were looking for. They were trying to use the wastewater testing as a device to learn where there were pockets of COVID that had gone undetected via testing of people. So it was a research program through OSU, and I'm guessing that there's a link on the OSU website someplace to that, how the study got started, where the test sites were, what they did with the data. Nowhere in any of the language at that time was there any indication at all that it was a danger to the public. It was a population identification research program. And I think they even did say what John basically just said too, which is wastewater treatment facilities will treat, remove, and kill any kind of virus that might be in it. So the focus was on the research of finding where COVID was. And at the time, it was a pretty new study, but we all know how things have changed pretty rapidly in this process. So, I'm going to have to excuse myself because my whiny cat just got here and I need to take him to the garage. I'll be right back.
Hey, John.
Sean, Cameron, before you go, Sean had his hand up.
Oh, okay.
I was basically going to say what Ann said, so.
All right, thank you. Cameron, you had a question?
Yeah, I do. This is going to be a long-term effect. I mean, it's just not the COVID interjecting. I mean, our wastewater is treated, and then the water is treated and put back in the river. How is this going to affect, you know, as far as our fisheries and stuff down the road? Clams and the things like that. I mean, it's not only for us, but there's other, I'm sure, facilities that are doing the same thing in their waterways. It would be interesting to find somebody to do some type of study, because I think this is going to affect us down the road, possibly. That's kind of scary, you know, to look at the ramifications down the road. Whoa. So it'd be interesting to see if somebody comes up and does some type of stuff. It would be beautiful. I mean,
wow. We'll see what kind of what kind of methods and studies get pulled together as a result of this. I do want to just reiterate that our drinking water is thoroughly treated for viruses as well as other pathogens like Cryptosporidium and Giardia. The wastewater side, we don't really monitor for that. Clearly, we do a very thorough job of reducing the pathogen contents in our wastewater before we discharge it. But I just want to make clear that that's, when it comes to that type of thing, that is nowhere near as scrutinized on the wastewater side as it is on the water side. And, unlike drinking water, our disinfection of our wastewater doesn't have the 2, 3, 4 requirements for 2 log removal of crypto, 3 of giardia, 4 of viruses. So, it's just not something that's really been looked at heavily on the wastewater side. As long as you're meeting all your effluent permit requirements, we're treating the water very well, but it's a whole different thing than the drinking water side, and it's just not scrutinized at the level of viruses, at the level that they are on the drinking water side.
Thanks, John, and I might add that on the wastewater side, that this particular virus is spread through aerosol and not droplet in terms of what they've found, and therefore we should not see it in the wastewater stream at this point. It would be very unusual to see it there due to the temperatures and the other issues going on at the plant. And I think at that point, if you'd like to continue with your manager's report, we'd be happy to have you go forward.
That was a great discussion.
I agree.
Yes.
I think, talking COVID safety is always worthwhile.
Yes.
Well, in terms of the manager's report, we spent a lot of time talking about the COVID issue. One thing I did in the written version of the report is I've given a project update on a variety of our larger type of projects. I don't think I see anything really worth singling out right now. Unless anybody has any questions about any of the project updates I've given. I do want to say for sure, before we end the manager's report, as you guys know, we talked about an operations supervisor position. I appreciate the great discussion about that and all the support we got on that. And I just want to congratulate Leonard Whiteman. He has received that well-deserved promotion, and I just wanted to recognize Leonard before we leave the manager's report or before we have additional questions about anything in the manager's report.
Congratulations.
Yo, Leonard, that's awesome.
Well-deserved.
Very well-deserved.
Tom, you had a question completely.
In reference to in your report, John, you were talking about expanding the garage for our vehicles, and that it was more practical to build little generator shacks at the wells and for emergency use as well as at the reservoirs. I'd like to make a suggestion that basically that's a good thing. I like that suggestion. It's cost effective. But my suggestion is that since these are portable generators, these little generator shacks you're considering to build, who knows what contingencies or emergencies are necessary in the future. So I was thinking you might incorporate a roll-up door instead of making a hard, permanent setup for these generators, to make them still portable with a roll-up door so that we could hook a vehicle up to them and use them if necessary somewhere else.
Well, I appreciate that feedback. That's exactly what we're doing. It won't be a roll-up door. It will be, I think, more of a swing-out door with a lock where we can still, if we need to, if we absolutely have to take that generator somewhere else, that we still have the flexibility to do that. And one of the reasons, I just want to point out, one of the reasons these are portable generators is because they're currently residing in our garages and taking up a lot of parking space. And these locations where they will be located is pretty much the location they would be pulled to in the event of a power outage or an emergency anyway. So there's a number of advantages to this, not the least of which is if we have a power outage, we can get back up and running much quicker if the generators are already on site. If the generators are already on site, assuming there's still infrastructure available, they will already be where they need to be in the event of a subduction zone earthquake, and we won't have to risk any employee asking them to, in a very frantic way, to hook them up and to haul them to the required location. So there's a lot of advantages to this. I don't think they'll have to be moved very often, Tom, because they will then be located where they would normally have been transported to anyway. But you know, with the same thought you had, I still want to have that flexibility. So the buildings will be designed, the generator shacks will be designed so that you can quickly disconnect the generator, back up to it with the truck, and tow it somewhere else if the situation arose where we felt like we should do that.
I've noticed in several of our financial reports that we regularly maintain those generators, and I was wondering what's the life of them, and would it be prudent to have a backup, an extra one generator? I know they're probably, I'm just guessing here, $10,000 a piece, but if it's needed, you know, that seems like a reasonable expense for a backup. What's the life of them? Like I say, I know you do preventive maintenance on them, and that's good. That'll maintain their long life. But how long do you think they're good? Do you think it's a good idea to have a backup to the backups, as it were?
Well, I do. And in one sense, we will maintain a backup in that during a power outage, we still need to be able to take a portable generator to each and every one of our lift stations just to hook up power long enough to manually empty the wet well before we haul it to the next one and do the same. And, you know, that's how we maintain services at our sewage lift stations, you know, the small ones that are scattered throughout town. So we will maintain a generator for that purpose, but it can still be used for any other utility purpose. And that generator will remain housed here in the garage here at the authority, at the treatment plant here. Because it's one that, you know, the lift stations, we have to have something that is not dedicated. We have to have something where we can just bounce from station to station. So I think that will help to serve as a redundancy to the system, although it is earmarked for a particular purpose. I will say as how long they last, I think as long as you maintain them, they'll last a long time. And I'll give you an example. The generator that we're currently using for those lift stations and the capacity I just indicated is a Vietnam War surplus generator that still works.
Excellent.
So they'll last a long time if you take care of it.
Yes, Cameron.
I got two questions. All right. So, are you going to build three spots for the generators? Is that what you're saying? mini sheds or whatever, mini huts or...
Yeah, and I'll bring this topic before the board again, because this will require some contractor assistance. It'll require some bids and some quotes, but...
I just hope that they're all three pretty good secure sites.
Yeah, well, and I do want to also emphasize that even without considering our parking issues and our existing garage, the two garages we have because of, well, partly because of all the emergency generators we got there, that this particular task is actually identified as the number one priority in our new water master plan. So
I thought Rupel Road was
well let me clarify. Of the jobs that we have identified for priority in the master plan, there are like facility upgrade categories and there are like pipeline replacement categories. This providing emergency power permanently to the reservoirs and to the spillwells has been identified as our number one project, our facility improvement upgrade in our master plan. So, you know, not only, you know, so this makes sense to do, even if the considerations about how much room they're taking up in our garages wasn't you know, part of the equation. So, but we will build, you know, fairly, you know, modest, the generators aren't that big, fairly modest buildings just to provide security and protection for the equipment. I imagine there'll be a transfer switch in there and a variety of other things. We'll need to run some power and some lighting to these, I call them generator shacks. But I think we can free up a lot of space in our garage, at the very least delay this garage expansion project, and at the same time fulfill our number one priority in our master plan and significantly bolster our emergency response plans and capabilities by having these generators already on site where we need them when we need them.
Awesome. Thank you.
And that's all for the manager's report to me, Carolyn.
All right. Thank you, John. Let's move forward to unfinished business 6A, water wastewater master plans. And it's back to you, John.
Yes. As I think you all know, after a significant wait, we did receive another version of the water master plan. I will say, having reviewed it carefully and compared it to our the earlier draft of the plan, that we have gotten a far superior product. I think it was worth the wait. I'm particularly pleased about the section they added for additional project financing options and so forth. You know, I did get comments from several board members. I provided another batch of comments. Most of the stuff is just housekeeping, to be honest. There's perhaps probably the most significant thing that I noticed is there's an SDC study in the master plan that was done by a third party. Well, that plan was done before our previous round of comments was received, and we have restructured the priority, the jobs in our capital improvement list in terms of priority, and those have been restructured in the heart of the master plan based off of our latest information. But what I notice is that the order and the priority and the projected time frame for doing those jobs was not updated in the SDC portion of the plan, which was done by a third party, and it's going to have to be reworked to align with our latest list of how we prioritize our improvements over the next 20 years. So none of this is really big stuff. I talked to Parametrics. They seem to be very content with our latest set of comments. As I said, most of them are housekeeping. I would expect all those comments to be incorporated and for us to have what I would consider the final version of the plan with by the end of next week. Now, I do want to say that once we feel as though we've got the final version of the plan and the engineers put their signatures on it, we still have to send it to the Oregon Health Authority and put it through a plan review process for them. I don't expect if we correct all the things that we've noticed, I don't expect any issue with the state of Oregon in terms of the content of our plan. My concern is it may take a little time for this to work its way through the queue and to get approved by the state. But once it's approved by the state, the plan's done officially. But I just want to remind everybody that that's a step in the process.
Tom, as I haven't gone completely through the plan, but I'm about a halfway through it or three quarters of the way through it. And I had a question concerning the pumps at the 300K reservoir. There are two pumps there, and my question is, are both of those pumps used just to fill the 600K res, or is one of them used to also fill the 100K res?
My understanding is that they are both used to fill the 600K, but the reason we have two is one's a backup for the primer.
Okay, so then if that's the case, then the 100K res is only its inflow only comes from pressure from the original or the standard system.
Well, I tell you what, I see Leonard's on the call, and we never pick on him. Leonard, can you shed some light on Tom's question? Are you there? Well, he may not be there. My understanding is that the 100K fills up more as a direct result of the wells or of Horn Creek than of anything having to do with the 300K. The pumps don't fill up the 100K, they fill up the 600K. And you know, I'm still a little rusty on some of the, you know, the inner workings of the 100K, but my understanding is it fills up just with, just due to the well pumps or due to the water being pumped from Horn Creek.
Thank you.
Jadon, do we have any update on the wastewater plan?
The only update I have on the wastewater plan is we should be expecting a draft of that very soon. I've been ratcheting up the pressure on that particular plan, and I do know in the last couple of weeks I've been peppered with several data requests on the wastewater side. So I don't have any firm commitment for time other than I do know that, well, I feel like we probably should have gotten it by now, but I will say in Parametrics' favor that we're using them for on several fronts simultaneously, but I do know that they're working on it, and I am confident that a draft should not be further more should not be very far out.
Thank you. see any other questions on master plans, so let's go to 6B, Water Management and Conservation Plan. John?
Yeah, and this is just kind of a placeholder. You know, the plan is due fairly soon. It's due April 1st, which is right around the corner. So I know Parametrics is working on this very hard. With the deadline related to this, this may be robbing of some a few resources from the wastewater plan temporarily. But they have I've been corresponding with Parametrics about this fairly routinely, and we are currently supplying them a variety of information and data that they are using to put this plan together. So that's really the only update I have about this plan at this time. This one will move fast because it's due to the state in less than 2 months.
Thank you.
Match it up.
Item 7, new business. 7A, we need to appoint the budget officer for fiscal year 22-23. This is a function that we do every year as a board. And
I'd like to nominate Authority Director John Wesley as budget officer for fiscal year 22-23.
I second that motion.
All right.
I've got a correction. Did you say Director John Wesley or...
I'm sorry, yes. You're right, Cameron. Authority Manager John Wesley.
Okay.
Thank you.
You just dropped in scale there, man.
I second. Hearing no other nominations, we'll move forward. It has been moved and seconded to appoint a budget officer for fiscal year 22-23 as John Wesley. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
John, unanimously, you have been elected board budget officer for this next fiscal year.
Well, thank you, I think.
The train just blew by.
Well, I accept, and as you guys know, I'll do the best job I possibly can.
Thank you. Item 7B, Kwan and Straub Lift Station Upgrades.
Yes, I've been giving some previews about this in my manager's report for several months. I do now have three bids for this particular project. Call them bids, call them proposals, call them quotes. Bringing it before the board because resolution number 21-03 established a local contract review board for the Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority, and the board of directors are designated to all be members of that local contract review board. Further, in resolution number 21-03, there's a stipulation that PCJWSA requires any contract between $25,000 and $150,000 to have board approval. So I'm coming to the board seeking that approval. Hopefully you've all had a little bit of time to look over the proposals and the quotes. I do want to say a couple of words. And I, you know, to begin with, when I took over as authority manager and very shortly realized that we were almost daily having to pull submersible pumps in our sewage lift stations to deal with rags, I knew we had a problem because I've been in this business a long time and I've never worked in any wastewater environment where pumps had to be pulled at a frequency like that. So it was pretty clear to me that, you know, we had some issues at the pump stations we needed to address. Also, having, you know, seen the pump stations, you know, these pump stations are fairly old. They're out of date. They've been patched together over the years to the point where, to be honest, I can't even tell you that some of these electrical panels for these pump stations are even up to code anymore. So that's another issue. And, you know, the third issue I saw with these pump stations is, and perhaps the most important issue, is that they provide almost no arc flash protection for employees that have to interact with these pump stations. The safety features on these are, in my opinion, lacking. And, you know, from a safety perspective, I believe that these pump stations need to be upgraded. So, three reasons: particular safety, reliability, and just making sure that, you know, the electronics in these and the electrical services and all the electronic components are up to code. So one of my priorities was to move forward on a process. We won't get this done in 1 year, but a process to revamp, rebuild, upgrade our smaller sewer lift stations. You know, we're thinking about lift stations like Kiwanda and like Straub and Beachy and Madrona. These are all lift stations that sorely need to be upgraded.
So on a scale 1, 2, 3, and 4, which one? Obviously, it must be Kiwanda and Straub as far as the most in need of replacement. Is that?
Well, to be honest with you, I would call it. Kiwanda is I think priority number one. The others are all high maintenance, but they don't. I don't think they stick out quite as much as Kiwanda.
Doesn't it do the majority of the? I mean, the workhorse.
Well, I can tell you, it's the one that requires the most maintenance in terms of pumps that have to be pulled due to a rag issue or something, caught in an impeller. Beachy is a priority too, but I'm a little reluctant to do much with Beachy with the Kiwanda Corridor project going in, and I'm not quite sure what's really going to happen on that side of town. So what we've decided to do this first year is to do Kiwanda and Straub. And we do have issues with both of them. I want to say when I embarked on this effort, there were a couple of things important to me. I feel like whenever possible that you should standardize. For example, I don't think we want a system where we've got 6 or 7 lift stations out there that all have different brand of pumps in them, that are a variety of makes and models and manufacturers. You know, what we're trying to do, what I want to do, is to standardize. And, you know, I think that should be an important consideration in any decision we make about a contract for this.
So how many different pumps for the 9 lift stations? You're talking, what, 6 different pumps?
Well, when you factor in various sizes, we have a whole mishmash. And I know that a lot of the pumps we have right now, they're Barnes pumps. You know, one of our goals is to upgrade these pump stations from like a 2 or 3 horsepower to a 5 horsepower to get into a power range where rags are not going to be a constant hassle. And so, you know, we're going to upgrade. These will be 3-phase systems, but they'll be 230-volt 3-phase. They'll step up with through a VFD and give us 3-phase power to run some slightly beefier pumps and to help ensure that they can power through rags or anything else in their way.
So bumping up on that, electrical part of it, and we have to have the guys be somewhat electrical educated or any of that? I mean, does that...
Well, for the upgrades, we'll be hiring electricians to do the wiring.
Okay.
So the pump companies will provide the pumps, they'll provide the control systems, they'll provide the panels. We'll still need an electrician to come and to hook up the panels to the power side, and then to hook up to the pumps to the other side of the panel. So this is beyond anything that we can do, not only just ability or skill-wise, but also even legally.
When they're swapping things out, they don't have to have a electrical where it's not going to change any of that.
No, and you know, one of the nice things about standardizing, well, let me put it this way. Imagine a time where counting rags and having to pull pumps is a thing of the past for us. After this upgrade, it will at these two pump stations.
Well, that's almost like we're upgrading from going down our hands and knees and reading meters now that you don't have to.
Well, yeah, you know, I think the reliability factor on these is going to be instantly noticeable. But, you know, so imagine a time when we don't have to talk or think about rags anymore, clogging our lift stations, but also imagine a scenario where we can have a single 5-horsepower spare pump on the shelf. And it can drop into any single pump station we have.
Right.
And that's one of the real advantages of standardization is you don't have to carry a whole line of spare parts for every different pump, make, and model under the sun, right? So, you know, that's a big factor for me in my consideration of these proposals. You know, there's other factors, too. One of them is, you know, I want to say that for a job like this, it's hard to spec a job like this so that every contractor is giving you an apples-to-apples comparison. Because what everybody's got a different pump, they all are representatives of different pump manufacturers that have different control systems and different technologies. And so what I want to stress is for me, this was an exercise in trying to find somebody that provides us with the best overall solution, not necessarily the lowest price. So, having said that, we've essentially got three bids or quotes, and this is to do two pump stations this year. So, roughly, and I'm speaking rather roughly, we've got one supplier who's in the $60,000 range, one who's in the $70,000, and one who's in the $80,000 range. And in this particular case, I have to tell the board that I'm advocating for the flight pump option. It is the most expensive option. But in terms of standardizing, we already have, Ella was recently upgraded. It was upgraded to flight pumps. Most of the submersible pumps we have at the wastewater treatment plant are flight pumps. These are pumps that have performed very well. I believe they've got the best technology in terms of anti-clog considerations. One of the providers, their solution is a grinder pump. Well, grinder pumps will probably help them from getting plugged, but I'd rather pass that stuff to our pre-treatment, our headworks at our treatment plant, and catch things like rags on the screen as opposed to having them ground up into little pieces and finding their way into our sludge, if you know what I'm saying. So, I would, of course, defer to the board's decision, but this is one of these cases where the most expensive proposal we've got is by far our best solution. It's the particular proposal we should go with, that standardization is truly something we want to pursue. And I can tell you that their products have performed beautifully. And their after-sales support is also incredible. So, I need to bring this before the board. I need the board to approve this expenditure, and that's what I'm asking the board to do right now. In particular, the flight pump option is the one from the company called Xylem. And I think you should have in the board packet, you should have two quotes for them. They broke their quote into both pump stations as opposed to combining it into one. Keep in mind that there will be some electrical contractor work on top of this, which would be the case for any of these quotes. But we have budgeted for this, and we do have funds available for this. And so with that, I would turn it back over to the board for any questions or any board action that the board would feel would be appropriate.
Thank you. And
on that last point that you just made, John, the electrical contractor that would come in to do the wiring and that part of the installation, we're obviously not buying equipment from them, but we are still paying their services. And I don't believe, I just want to clarify and make sure, I don't believe that those figures are included in these bids because we did. So in terms of approving the project to move forward, which I wholeheartedly hope we do tonight, do we need to do an estimate of include money to cover that, or do we already have the electrical contractor money in our budget?
Well, based off of what we anticipate the electrical cost to be, we have plenty of budget for it.
Okay.
What I will say is the reason that we didn't include those costs is because it's extremely difficult for an electrician to bid on something that is so conceptual and is based off of three different approaches by three different contractors.
But our fiscal year budget for this type of work includes ample money to cover the electrical contractor that would be beyond this. So in an effort tonight to move this forward, we would be accepting and moving forward with one of these three bids.
Yes, and just to let you know, my estimate on the electrical contractor part of the work is about $11,000 to $12,000 per site.
So does that have to be separated? That's a separate bid from electrical contractor?
It is, yes. These particular suppliers, I've got the quotes for. These are pump companies. They have panel. They have subcontractors who do panel work that will assemble the panels for them. But once they are on site, we will still need an electrician to do the electrical connections.
I think typically in this case, when we have bids like this with product on it, we allow a couple of thousand in our overall approval in case there are small hiccups that occur so that the authority manager doesn't have to come back to the board. And then the electrical contracts will be underneath the $25,000 amount, and so those do not need approval. One thing I'd like to add, John, is when you mentioned chopping up the product versus catching it in the screen, there is potentially another issue down the road if we were to go to the chopping up process, is that we don't know what's in those products, and what happens as a part of chopping it up, what then gets distributed back into our waste stream. And by pulling them out whole, I think we're much further ahead in preventative issues when it comes to the environment. So I would very much support something that is not chopping things up into smaller pieces and potentially putting it back in the waste stream. Are there other questions for John on these proposals? Yes, Cameron?
Yeah, how long are you talking about as far as downtime on this for each project?
Well, you're talking about in terms of the lift stations?
Yes.
I would guess the lift station would probably be down for a couple of days, and that would be one of those cases where we would take our emergency generator over there and connect. What we will do is we will be sure that we have the ability to do that until the last second. And if there is downtime, we can deal with that downtime by manually pumping the station out with the connection to the transfer switch and a portable generator. And the transfer switch is really not the power source, the power meter, the transfer switch, that stuff's all going to remain largely intact. It's only the panel and the pumps and the control systems. And when I mean control systems, I'm talking about the control systems that tell the pump when to stop and when to start.
Right.
We're upgrading those at the same time, trying to get away from a fluid system and deal with more like a pressure transducer system that will work in these types of environments.
So as far as the pump size, are the container this is all in, all the new equipment is going to fit in, or do we need to make our boxes bigger?
No, the lift station wet wells and the piping coming to and from are not part of this project. They're in good workable condition. I will say that if there is any compatibilities with the rails, and the rails are what the submersible pumps slide up when you pull them out, or they slide down the rail when you lower them down. We aren't expecting any compatibility issues with the rails, and if there were, you could easily get an adapter to make those pumps slide right down over the existing rail system.
So as far as start time, I mean, is there for these companies to do projects? When is the earliest, most convenient?
Well, what I can tell you is I don't know the answer to that. The indications I've got is it wouldn't be too far out. If we were to get this approved tonight, tomorrow morning I would call and I'd give a notice to proceed. And we get on their calendar or their schedule.
Any other questions? Ann?
I just was wondering the same thing. I'm prepared to make a motion if there are no other questions.
Please go ahead.
Okay, hearing none, I will move that we accept the bid from the Xylem Water Solutions USA Incorporated for the replacement of the Straub and Kiwanda lift stations, and that we approve that at an expense not to exceed $86,000.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded that we accept the Xylem Water Solutions USA bid for the flight pumps for the Kiwanda and Straub lift stations for an amount not to exceed $86,000. All in favor? signify by saying aye, raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is unanimously approved. John, I want to thank you for your clear and very thorough presentation. I think it is very helpful to get us all on board on the same page.
Like our pumps.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John.
Thank you.
So then we can get our inventory down.
Always a good thing.
Yeah.
Item 8. John or Rochelle, were there any guest questions or comments? Okay. Moving on to item 9. Director comments at this time? Yes, Tom?
I only had one for Rochelle. John quoted a resolution earlier, and I was just brought to mind what I mentioned before about what are actual working resolutions that we have still in force. And if I know you were working on it, Rochelle, but what's the status of that resolution book you were putting together for us?
I'm not as far as I would like to be, but that does remind me that I should do a few more. I'm learning how to build websites right now. That's not really in my job description, typically.
Well, the resolution thing, are we 25% done? Are we 50% done? Or
I have quite a few. I have them all put together. It's just putting them on the website in an order that isn't like 10 miles long that you guys have to scroll through and looks messy. I'm trying to put them in files by year or either by pertinence maybe with like a table of contents on each one. Because that's how they look in the office. We have a big resolution book and there's a table of contents per year so you know exactly what it is. And then you can, if that's the thing that you want in the table of contents, you can look into that year. But putting it on the web's another story.
Well, I'm more interested in resolutions that are still in effect.
There's quite a few that are still in effect.
It's important to keep in mind that when we pass a resolution, then we rescind the resolution. That doesn't make that resolution go away.
It's still there.
It's still part of the history of the authority, and I would feel as though the collection ought to be complete and we ought to be able to see that we actually rescinded a particular resolution.
Rochelle, I
appreciate your diligence in this because I have participated in doing websites on a number of occasions. And this is the critical point to make the whole project work, is how you think that through and how it gets organized and accessible to people. Once that solution is made, plugging the pieces in isn't as difficult, but that approach to the organization of it is what is key to making it accessible to anybody, even those of us who know what we're looking for, but there'll be people who don't know what they're looking for,
right,
where that structure will be even more important. So thank you for that diligence.
Wouldn't that go into an archive?
Technically, we do have board packets under the board access portion of the website that are archived, and they are in zip files that you have to download and then go through. And in my opinion, that's not the easiest way to go about things. So I can definitely do it that way, and that would be a quick and easy solution for the time being.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Cameron, did you have a comment?
Yes, I do. I'm kind of concerned about the COVID and boosters shots. I don't know. I think we should have a conversation about where we're going to go with this. I don't know what, I was kind of wondering, get a feeling of all the board members' thoughts on this. Are we paying employees when they're off with COVID? Or,
well, they use their sick time.
And how much sick time? I mean, 5 days. I mean, and then they're also, that's not burning up vacation time, no.
They're allowed to use their sick time. If they run out of sick time, they're allowed to use their vacation. If they run out of vacation, they are unpaid.
Okay. So what's everybody's thought as far as boosters? Did we pay? No, that was, they were, shots were offered. And they're still being offered.
And my thought would be that we discussed back toward the beginning of the COVID outbreaks, the concept of requiring vaccinations, and we made a choice not to do that. If we do not require vaccinations, which I still believe is a correct decision, that would also extend to the booster. I think what we have seen going on, or from John's words, my feeling is that John is diligent about providing information, and that is the extent of his appropriate efforts. It's an individual choice in this instance whether to pursue a vaccination in the first place, and therefore it follows whether to pursue a booster as well. So I don't, I mean, that's my feeling about it.
Cameron, why don't we think about this between now and the next meeting, and if you want to submit something to put it on the agenda for discussion, because it needs to be, you believe it needs to be readdressed in a way, and want to put that out there, then we can certainly have a discussion, but we can't have a discussion on it during the director comment period because it wasn't on our agenda.
Right. Yeah, I understand that. And you know, they were talking in the news that they're about taking away the mask in March, the end of March. Mm-hmm. So, and then here I'm thinking, all right, then if that's the case, we're going to start meeting as a group back in the building. And I don't know, I really don't think there's enough room for all of us to sit at that table and have 6 feet apart. I mean, so this is, we're going to have to be looking at, put this on the table. When are we going to get back together as a body, you know? When are we going to have an open meeting for the public, you know?
Well, all of our meetings at this point are open to the public, and they have an ability to join us in these meetings at any point in time. And yes, you are correct that the Oregon is lifting the indoor mask mandate on or before March 30th, so it would be behoovous to put an item on the agenda about how we will phase back into in-person meetings if we do so at the March meeting. Tom, do you have a comment?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Sean,
any other? I'm sorry?
Well, I was wondering what Sean's thought process was on this.
Well, we're not going to discuss it at this point because it's not on the agenda, and we will have an item on the agenda at the March meeting to talk about moving back to meetings in person, and how we're going to process that and what we're going to do about it. But the announcement by the state of Oregon relative to indoor masking was not made in time to get it on the agenda for this meeting. John?
It seems like we're close to adjourning. Before we do, a little feedback about the platform for our meeting today. I thought, for at least for me, I thought it worked great.
thought it worked great too. Sean?
Yeah, it just was easier for me to figure out than blue jeans, so I liked it.
Yeah. Well, if there's no objection, we'll all continue on with teams. I know there was some speculation about back users in the public who maybe wanted to join the meeting may have difficulty, but you know, we have the dial-in phone number that's on there, and that's how I think they would join the meeting anyway, so at least until the time comes when we do start meeting face-to-face, and I can hope that that is soon. I feel like it's not that far off. I'm optimistic about it, so...
Is the phone number put up on the website so people can see the phone in? Or is it put on the billing for people for board meetings?
There is a notice on our website to call the office if you would like to be part of the meeting. There is a notice in the newspaper that they can call the office if they would like contact information for the meeting as well.
All right. What about putting it on our billing? But nobody reads the
bill. Nobody reads the bill, but I can definitely try.
All right. And John is the Mac user. This was just a fine platform for me. So I'm using a desktop and it worked just fine.
Okay. I do have one question for John. On the monthly reports, I noticed that last month was on the unaccounted bill water percentage for December was like skyrocketed, and it's like it's come down.
Cameron, why don't I ask that you call John about that, because we discussed that at the last meeting and you weren't there for that conversation.
Well, I didn't see it too much in the minutes, so go ahead.
All right, give John a call.
That's fine.
Thank you. All right, it is 6:26, and I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you all very much, and have a great evening.